Welcome to Vacation Station, hosted by Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazines.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Vacation Station Travel Show, where every fourth Tuesday we get to chat with travel writer Debbie Stone. She literally travels the world. She crosses the country. She's been all over. She's been everywhere, man, I'm telling you. But we do like to call her the Fire Monkey. She got that nickname from her trip to Bhutan many years ago. And it's kind of stuck every time when she came on the show that day, and it's never left us. But today she's going to be talking about ice instead of fire. So I'm going to be very interested to see how the Fire Monkey did in the land of ice. She went to Greenland with Albatross Expeditions. Now, Albatross is one of my favorite Fleetwood Mac songs, Peter Green, the guitarist. And so I'm just loving this whole thing about birds and ice and whales and really getting into the culture of this area that it's starting to open up a little bit, but is still very remote. And definitely, if you're going, this is an epic bucket list adventure. And it was for Debbie. Her story is up on blendradioandtv.com. You can see it there, but I also have a link in the show notes for you, so you can go right there. So welcome back, Fire Monkey. How are you?
I am doing fine. I'm back from the, as you said, the land of the ice.
I know. Isn't that wild? Like, so yeah. You didn't melt. You're here. So we know you're not a witch. Just kidding. I know
right.
You're not.
Good thing. No. Good thing. Although my kids might sometimes think I am, but you know.
Like we aren't going to go there. We're not going there. But I'm going to find, I love the, like I said, Albatross is like my favorite song. And I actually think the albatross bird is pretty incredible. So that you went on albatross expeditions, my little ears picked up immediately. And I'm like, she went on an albatross. So, I mean, this seems like an amazing venture in that you went with the right company that seems to be very focused on the activities and education. From your article, I got that they're very centered on leaving a light footprint. That when we look at cruises, because sometimes cruise ships can be basically a floating city, and we need to look at when we're going to places like Greenland, what are we doing there? When you're looking at climate change happening when you're going there, right? So being on the right kind of vessel makes sense. And it seems like this was kind of a smaller ship, even though it had two restaurants.
Exactly. I think the ship can hold probably, I think it's maybe upwards of 180, I want to say. But when we were there, we only had, I think, about 164 on the ship. But it's a nice size expedition ship. Has all the bells and whistles. I mean, there was even a little bit of a gym. There's a little spa. There's, as I said, two restaurants. It's a great, wonderful, beautiful observation area. Upstairs on the top deck, and then there's, a wonderful, kind of lecture meeting area. And you're right, they are focused on education. They're focused on nature. They're focused on being good ambassadors, and they have a reputation for being, their ships are built for fuel efficiency, so they like to, reduce their carbon footprint. That's their goal, and minimize their impact environmentally on wherever they go. And they do specialize in the polar expedition cruise arena. They are pioneering polar expedition cruise operators. And so I thought, all those things are very important, and they put top priority on safety, which is another thing that, of course, is very important for passengers and future would-be passengers to know, So I thought that they had, a great staff and crew and, expedition staff that was very knowledgeable, very helpful, wore different hats in terms of giving talks, leading walks and history walks and leading hikes, which were wonderful. So, yeah, it was a wonderful combination. Then, of course, the food, which was excellent and plenty of.
Well, we're not going to complain about that, because it seems like you had a lot of that, but you actually got off, obviously. So this,
yes.
You went on let's go to Greenland, because I think a lot of us see, it's up there on the globe, right? And, I think all of us need to possess a globe, an actual globe, and
yes.
Twirl it around. You know, there's something about getting that idea of it, and especially when you go to a place like Greenland. I mean, this is a remote area, and it is I didn't remember this from geography class until I read your article, like the largest island, really, that is not a continent in this country, in the world, excuse me, in the world.
It is, so, and people sometimes don't even think about that or even, you know, kind of remember the fact that, it is, and it's huge, and, you know, people sometimes forget about Greenland because there's been a lot of attention paid to Iceland in the past number of years, which became a very huge tourist destination. And, you know, people are very familiar with Iceland, you know, but a lot of people are not really familiar with Greenland. They just think of it as kind of being out there. And yes, it is out there, but it is this huge island, and much of it, 80% of it, is basically covered in ice, you know. And but that's, you know, people go to see, you know, the Arctic. They go to want to be above the Arctic Circle, and much of Greenland is above the Arctic Circle. There is a portion of it that is not, that is below the Arctic Circle. But, you know, most people want to go and they want to see that. They're excited to see ice fjords. They're excited to see glaciers. They want to see the icebergs, and that's, you know, they want to. And they also want to see the cultural component of Greenland, which is to go into the settlements and the villages and the towns and, you know, to see how the people live and what do they eat and, you know, all that kind of thing.
I heard you ate reindeer.
I tasted a tiny bit of it. I'm not really a meat eater, but yeah. I really wanted to try some of the things because I felt like it was an interesting way to understand a culture, mm-hmm. because food is so tied into cultural mores. And yeah, I mean, they eat, many of the people up there, a good percentage, a lot of them are subsistence. That's their lifestyle in some of these very small villages. And so, yes, they eat what they can find and basically kill, whether it's reindeer, whether it's, you know, cod, whether it's muskox, and they use it for food. And so, you know, there's muskox soup, there's, you know, reindeer meat, they dry the cod, you know. So it was very interesting. And then you'll see them drying their fish and also parts of their animals that are drying for them to use. And so, yes, it is a different way of life, and to understand mm-hmm. that this has been a traditional way of life since the time, you know.
The tribal community is the Inuits, right, which is really they're from Asia area. And so when you think about what they're eating, whale is also part of it, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And we've actually interviewed a lady who was way up there on an island that is actually one of the first islands to go bye-bye because of climate change in Alaska. And so the Inuits are there, and she lived with them back in the 70s. Pretty much almost like in an igloo, what she lived in. Like, not an igloo, but like, it was just, she was out in the boonies because mm-hmm. of what her husband did. And, you got to think back in the 70s, we don't have what we have now, right? And I don't know if it makes a difference now that I think about it, when you're in that remote of an area. However, you know, when we lived in Africa, we had solar, we had satellite, we had things that, in a way, we were ahead of time in a weird way, yet behind. I don't know how to explain that. We use things that are only now coming into the Western world or part of the norm in the bush. You know,
mm-hmm.
so it's kind
mm-hmm.
of an interesting, weird, different thing. But being out in those remote areas, I mean, so they're eating fish, they're eating whale. I mean, cod. You had to eat the cod, right? I know you like fish, so
and they drive the cod a lot, so that's very important to them. You know, and whale blubber is very important. And these are, you know, this is sources of protein for them. You know, I mean, so that is.
But
you know,
what about vegetables? Is there any kind of greenery?
Yeah, they do. I mean, what they can grow, particularly in the summer, which, you know, is a short season, but you can grow vegetables, and you can, you know, definitely buy vegetables in the store. They're going to be, you know, everything is that isn't grown or can be you know, gotten there is, of course, being, you know, shipped in or flown in, which then, of course,
it's expensive.
Accelerates the price, you know. Mm-hmm. So you could get, you can definitely get sticker shock when you go through grocery stores, which we did, you know. And also there are times when there aren't, you know, fresh fruits or vegetables available due to the time of the year, or they're not able to get them in, or whatever it is, you know, or due to
weather. Wow, I can imagine. You're not going to let your lettuce go bad in the fridge door. You know what I mean? That, like, if you bought lettuce, then you're eating the lettuce. That's something special.
Yeah, you eat what you buy, you know, and, or for example, you know, if you have things that you grow, then you're going to, you know, can them or what, you know, whatever is for the rest of the year, if you can, if they're the kinds of produce that can be frozen or canned. But, you know, but I mean, you know, having that protein is probably, you know, crucial. It's crucial to them, you know.
I mean, and it keeps you going in such cold. But, like, so when you're there, there's daylight. So I know Alaska fluctuates, right? And so, you know, all of these areas, when you're in the poles, you start lose. It's like the 6 months on, 6 months off. So tell us a bit about that. So when you were there, was it summer? And was it like people could actually grow something in the backyard? Because I saw one of your photos had flowers. So I was like, ooh, proof, there's flowers and ice in the same place.
Yep. they were, yes, things were growing because it was summer. I mean, I was there in the second week in August, so to speak. So it was still summer, although, you know, fall starts to come quickly towards the latter part of August. But, you know, they celebrate the summer solstice in June, and, you know, that's a big thing to be happy about. And, you know, they're delighted when the sun starts coming out again because, you know, you're living in relative darkness. And when I lived in Alaska, I lived in Fairbanks for a number of years. You know, we experienced some of that too.
Oh, wow.
You know, it started getting kind of light at, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, but the light was never like really bright light. And then around 3, it was like definitely, you know, you're getting into dusk and it's getting dark. And then in the summer, it's crazy because you're out at midnight and you have all this energy and you're, you know, doing everything possible and the plants are growing huge, you know, and so it's a very interesting, you know, what it does to your biorhythms, you know?
Yeah, it is weird. I mean, right where we are right now, we're in Asheville area, and right now we're just outside the city, but before we were right in the forest. And we were there in winter and then summer, right? So it was this whole different thing going on. And it was like being in a rainforest, yet I knew that the rainforest had snow when we were there before. So it was this whole other, I mean, we didn't get the big snow when we were there. Trust me. We did that in Wisconsin. We saved that for the Midwest. You guys do it well up there. Thank you very much. And Debbie knows from Chicago, like, hello, you win on the snow. But it is just this, it's a very interesting thing because I know that Alaska also has those like a rainforest, and it's hard to believe when you think about all the snow and then this fog comes in here where we are, and we keep watch every morning. I'm like up just to watch what is the Smoky Mountains. And I know you've hiked through, you know, here on the Appalachian Trail and been to Asheville too, that it just blows my mind how it changes with the seasons. And I don't know. It's really fascinating to me. I'm kind of like in this mode right now of that. And when I was reading about Greenland, I'm going, God, it's got to be really cool to witness that and then see the ice, because the ice, doesn't that also kind of create a fog as well? Like a kind of a smoky atmosphere?
Definitely. It definitely can. Yeah. The fog can hang in there. You know what I mean? Most definitely. Most definitely.
Well, so, yeah. That, well, cause you're living in Santa Fe right now. So you know where I'm coming from, this whole weird, like, this is all, there's moisture just in the air in the morning. Now, I was used to that when we lived in Kenya on the equator, like there'd always be moisture, right?
Right.
Well, unless you're in certain areas and there's a drought, but you know what I mean? There's that moisture that would come, and in the desert, like a lot of times you could go for months without any kind of moisture.
Yeah. Definitely, most definitely. It can be very dry, very, very dry, you know. So, but I think, you know, it's just, it's a world of ice, and I think people are fascinated with the different shapes and sizes and, you know, the colors. And it's fascinating. And when you see your first iceberg, when you head to the Arctic or the Antarctic, wherever it is, you know, you get excited and you're just like, wow. And then you see more, and then you see bigger ones, and then you see ginormous ones, and then you see, you know, different kinds, and you see the little tiny little bergy bits, and then you see these huge tabular ones that look like big sheet cakes, and, you know, then there's ones that, you know, have like almost arches, and you like look like you can tunnel through them. And so it's fascinating to me, all the different shapes and sizes that ice can create, you know. And the glaciers are phenomenal too, but the glaciers, you know, it's very, very, very apparent that there is things happening in terms of climate there, because you can see the recession of the glaciers. You can see where they started, and we were, you know, told all about that, and you can see where, how much of that has gone away, and now where is the glacier, you know, and how quick or how rapid this is going to recede even more, you know. So it is a very interesting, up-close, personal experience with what's going on.
You know, how did it feel going from New Zealand? Because, you know, before the pandemic, you went to New Zealand and you saw glaciers there and kind of had that kind of journey it's connected. It is.
We were, you know, very much it was clear when we would take hikes to glaciers, and, you know, our guide would say, this is the point, and, you know, we'd stop and we'd see this was where the glacier had been, you know, this is where it had been. And then we would hike much, much further and go, oh, there's the glacier now. And so that was quite a distance that we hiked to get to where the glacier is today, so to speak. So yes, a lot of similarities. And I think all over the world, in various places where there is, has been glaciers or are glaciers or glacier activity, that people can see the differences, you know. And it's not just scientists and researchers, you know, but these are, we're there, we're curious, we want to see, we want to learn, we want to know. And by being there and being and having this very, I don't know, very visceral experience, it comes home very, very profoundly.
What's it like? So did you go out on one of the Zodiac boats? Did you get to go out?
Yes, and that was the method that they had, because many times they couldn't dock at a town, and so they would be, you know, anchored out in the, you know, close by, but, you know, in the water, so you would have to have some form of transportation. So the Zodiac is, which is a very good form of transportation, which a lot of ships use, and the ships prepare you. They do a whole exercise and understanding how to get into a Zodiac. There's a proper way to do it, how to get out, how to behave in a Zodiac, what to do, what not to do, and it's, you know, it's quite hammered into you, which is important because it is all about safety. But yeah, those Zodiacs, they whip you to the dock, to the wherever, to land, and you get off, and then you have various options and activities that you can choose from, whether it's walking hikes or walking tours or a hike, and you know, the thing is everything is optional in terms of what you want to do when you get to land. So, you know, you can just, you know, start off and go on your own. You're given maps in terms of, you can take pictures, photos of the maps that they have hanging on the boards in the ship, and you learn all about, you know, the town and what you can do. Usually the night before, the day before, they will tell you and give you kind of a briefing and let you know what's going on, let you know what level the hike is, so that people understand this is how long it is, what's the terrain, et cetera, et cetera. Or, you know, that there's a museum in this town or not, this, you know, whatever it might be. You know, if you are interested in this, this is when it's open. There's a church here. You can go into this church.
Yeah, when that church is cool.
Yeah, you know, they had several churches. Many of the settlements had little, or towns had churches, and they're, you know, the architecture is very beautiful. A lot of Danish, of course, similarities, and you know, beautiful buildings, and the houses all colorful and very vibrant, which stand out against the environment. And they were so picturesque, especially if you're coming along in a ship and you get to a town and there's a big iceberg in front, but there's all these colorful houses behind, and you're like, wow, special beauty.
You know, South Africa had some of that in Cape Town area. I think you saw some of that on the coast. There's coastal communities, like even Oceanside, California has those little coastal houses. But The Pacific Northwest, I noticed that a lot, where people had these bright, colorful houses, especially if they were on the coastline and the northern part, like if you were out in Ilwaco. I know you went there,
yeah,
in those
sure.
areas, like if you were out on, you know, where you're really getting
Yep.
a lot of fog, people just were like, nope, we're going to be bright and colorful. You can see my house. I'm not going to be sunken in. You know, here I am, you know. And I loved it because it just kind of brought cheer, because it can get, I think you could probably get a little despondent if you don't have a lot of sunshine. And, you know, I'm not good without some sunshine. I'm definitely a sunshine person, but I love the Pacific Northwest and the drama of it all. And, you know, but when people do that with their houses, I'm like, yeah, that makes me happy. Thank you.
And, you know,
I need that.
They used to do it by what was happening. So, for example, red was like schools and education. And so everything, like buildings were red, or, you know, or like blue was whatever, or yellow was whatever. And so, like, you know, one was like a color for medical areas. So you would know just by color what the purpose of the use of that particular, what was going on in that building. So they did use color for certain reasons. And I know that was the same in several places in Scandinavia that we visited as well. And in Europe as well, but there was a certain reason for colors being painted, certain colors for, you know, different houses and things.
So going to Greenland's kind of like did you kind of feel like a full circle moment of all your travels and all the continents and countries you've been to? In
I
a
think
way?
It was kind of a culmination of kind of like polar expeditions, because we've been to Antarctica. And we've been to Iceland before, and we lived in Alaska, and I've been up far north in Churchill, Manitoba for the polar bears. And so I had always wanted to go to Greenland. It just was one of those places I thought, you know, this will be, I wanted to go there. First of all, I wanted to go there soon before the ice melts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was definitely one of my purposes, but also because I just thought, for some reason, I think it's because maybe I saw National Geographic years ago on Greenland, but I've always wanted to go there. And I think also after having lived in Alaska, there is a lot of similarity. You know, there's just definite. My husband and I, we were walking through little towns and settlements. We're like, oh my gosh, this is
well,
so
kind of reminds
much
me
like
also
Alaska.
When you went to, was it, you went on that cruise at Norway and the Shetland Islands.
Oh yeah,
kind of reminds me of
fjords,
that a little
the Norway,
bit.
The Norwegian fjords, you know.
Yeah,
and these small towns and what they depend on economically, a lot of fishing.
It's amazing.
You know, that's big. It is. It's fascinating to me. I love visiting places where the way of life is so very different to the way of life that I live. You know, and culturally, it's very, very different. But you know, you find people all over the world, and you find warm and friendly and welcoming people, which we did. The Greenlandic people were very welcoming, and I can't express that enough. They were extremely friendly, and so that was wonderful. And they welcomed you, and they wanted you to understand their culture or to try their food. You know,
The tourism aspect of that. Are they ready? You mentioned that in your article, and again, everyone, the link is in the show notes. And also, I want to give a shout out to Albatross Expeditions. It's albatross-expeditions.com. But you talk about now, you know, more people. I mean, if people are spending money to go to the moon and, you know, get up in space and do whatever they're doing up there with whatever rich billionaire is taking another rocket up there or whatever you want to call it, you know, they're going to spend money to go to Greenland, right? Because
right.
It's like you're saying, this is going to be, you're going to see something that no one's going to witness again. Nancy and I say, we saw Africa at a time that was already at a decline of wildlife, and we were really lucky, of what we saw in the mid-70s. We were very,
sure,
very lucky.
Sure.
So I feel like that's that kind of experience, but even more drastic.
Right.
With what you've experienced, and you've done Africa and all that too. So it's, you're seeing something as it's changing. You know, you go there a year later, it's already going to be changed. And so this is like an epic bucket list with a timestamp on, like, get your butt there now. So
absolutely.
Are they prepared for that? And also having to stay, like, you can't overrun these smaller communities, because like it's a huge island, but what I was reading, like 56,000 people. So it's not even Like I think when I first read it, I was like, oh, 56. I thought 560,000, so it's half the size of Tucson. Then I went, oh my God, it's only 56,000 people on the island,
Can you
right?
believe
Because of
that?
all the ice.
Yep. So it's so you think about it and you think, well, yes, and they are, you know, they are built in the process of building a couple more airports for people to, you know, get into Greenland, and then you know, but they want to do things the right way, I think, and so they are trying to, you know, look at how much infrastructure is needed to support tourism on a different level. They look at their neighboring Iceland, so to speak, and, you know, yes, there's, you know, Iceland dealt with an enormous crush of tourists that came after hearing, you know, after became the it place at one point in time, and so, you know, things happen very quickly, and when that happens often, it, you know, it can, you know, it can really create some issues, I think, for the country, for the locals, for whatever, if they don't have a good handle on how to deal with the tourism. So, you know, right now the majority of people who go to Greenland go via a ship, whether it be a type of expedition ship like I was on, or whether it be a ship that maybe stops in one or two places in Greenland and then goes on to some other places, you know, whether it's to Norway or whatever. But most of the people do arrive and do a ship. Either they arrive via a ship on a cruise ship, or they fly into Greenland and board a ship. You know, there's probably a smaller percentage that fly into Greenland and then just take off on their own. The problem is that there's no road system in Greenland. As I mentioned, you know, towns might have a few roads, but they dead end. You can't go from town to town by road to road. You know, it's boats and flights, you know.
Wow. Wow. Amazing, isn't it? And then what about dog sledding? Come on. Now you met the Greenland dogs. Like, I mean, who let the dogs out? Like, you know, the Greenlanders did.
Well, and the thing is that, you know, every town there are sled dogs, and, you know, sled dogs have been very important to Greenlanders, Greenlandic individuals and people for years. And there is one type of sled dog in Greenland. It's called the Greenland dog, or Canis, as they say, Canis lupus familiaris. And it is one of the purest and most isolated dog breeds in the world, because it does not allow to mix that particular dog with other dog breeds. Wow. Like in Alaska, you have, you know, huskies that have been mixed, or wood malamutes that have been mixed, you know, and they crossbreed. But the Greenland dog is one of the purest dog breeds in the world. And, you know, you are not, when you go to Greenland, they will emphasize to you, and there are signs everywhere in all the dog areas that you will be walking by, but even on the ship, they really, they did a whole lecture on it, but they also told us, please, please do not go up to pet a dog, don't interact with a dog. You can stand back a ways and take a photo if you wish, but please don't go.
It's like going to the border. You don't mess with the border dogs, like the police dogs, or, you know what I mean?
And these are working animals for the most part. They are working animals. And, you know, they you know, their lead, quote unquote, lead dog, the alpha is the owner who has the dogs. And, you know, the dogs listen to that person. And, you know, they can be unpredictable with people, because they might see you as a threat, you know, to the whole group of dogs, you know. So, definitely.
Yeah, you don't want to let the dogs out. You do not want to be the person who does that.
No.
Well, this is, it's interesting too, because you talk about the alpha and here's the person, the head person. But this land is your land, right? This land is free. And that's a whole other thing that is very hard. Like, to me, I'm always one of these people that people go, oh, you know, rose colored glasses, altruistic. I'm one of these people who wish we didn't have a passport, other than I like to see all the places I've been and have the stamps. But I really don't need that to know who, what, and where. But I would love to see a world without passports and borders. And I know that annoys a whole bunch of people. And I know that it's not happening right now, maybe in another life. But Greenland, like, no one is owning the land. So, like, what happens with the church? What happens if you build a house? Like, can people say, don't come in my yard? Like, how does that work? That's an interesting thing.
I think what it is you can own property. Do you understand? So you can own a house, but you don't own the land that it's on.
Yeah, like Mexico, so like if you're an expat.
You can sell the house and you can buy the house, but it's very clear, you know, Greenland is the people's country, so to speak, and it is that ownership doesn't, land ownership doesn't exist there. So it's all common, and it's not owned by the government. It's not owned by the municipality. It's not owned by anyone, the parliament. It's not, it's just all people's land. But you can, what you build on that land, you can own that structure.
That's going to be really hard for a lot of people's minds to wrap around. Like it is.
It's
a little
very
bit
different, but you know what? It's the way it is. I mean, it's just they set it up that way, you know. So, and people, I should notice that, you know, the people somehow think it's pretty funny. A lot of people don't know, or maybe they've heard in their geography lessons or their books, but, you know, Greenland, why is Greenland Greenland if it's not really green? And why is Iceland if not a lot of it is all ice? And there was, you know, the story about, you know, the fact that the settlers in Iceland wanted to keep people away because they loved it there, and they said, let's call it Iceland because then people won't come. And then Eric the Red, who was the person who came from Iceland, he was actually a murderer from Iceland and exiled to Greenland. Yes, and he's responsible for giving this island the name because he wanted to get people, settlers, to come to Greenland and having it say Greenland or sound like Greenland. It sounds very inviting, doesn't it, versus Iceland?
Yeah, nice and lush. Come. It's like a forest, and you can grow things. But hello, welcome to Iceland, and I'm going to chop your head off. Nice. You know, nice.
No, it was pretty, it's pretty kind of, it's just funny that the opposites are the way it is, you know. But that's very interesting. But, you know, I mean, in some of the places we stopped at, you know, the people, you know, would have a little taste of Greenland for us. So they would show us some crafts. They would show us some dancing, folk dancing, which looked a lot, you know, a lot of polkas almost. And, wow. You know, so it was a way to really kind of get a little bit more of an experience versus seeing it from just, you know, I'm kind of seeing it from an outside perspective. At least you had definitely some interaction with the Greenlandic people, you know, being able to go into their community centers and walk by where they live and, you know, just see how they lived and what they did and how things are changing, you know, and what's going to happen. Who knows what will happen in the years to come, you know? So it was, to me, it was a fascinating journey, and I feel very fortunate that I was able to do it now. Like I said, I had a sense of urgency to see it now.
Yeah, I think it is, you know, a sense of urgency. And you did go to Disco Bay. We have to bring that up because that's important.
Yes.
That's just important.
Yes.
I mean, it's Disco with a K, but you still went. I just feel like they should have, should have like a disco ball, like when you get there.
hanging above the bay. That's right. Hanging
above
the bay.
And we need like Gloria Gaynor, and we need like the Bee Gees. And, you know, I'm just saying that should happen. That should happen.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So are you going to go to another icy place? Do you have any other icy places on your bucket list?
At the moment, no. No icy places at the moment, no.
What's next for the Fire Monkey? Where are you going next?
Well, I'm going to be in the country, going to Gettysburg, and because I haven't been there in many years. I was there as a child, and my husband has never been there, and I'd like to revisit it and spend some more time there. And so we're going to Gettysburg, and then also going in pursuit of the national park list. We are heading to West Virginia to New River Gorge National Park. I believe it's the newest one in the system, and we will be exploring that national park. And so that's up. And then we're going to go to Upstate New York. We're going to go to Lake George and Lake Placid.
Nice.
And yeah, we're going to do some bunch of stuff in Upstate New York, and that'll be nice. And farther down in the line, we're going to Samoa. And
ooh, she's not going to Iceland then. Nope, that's no
Samoa.
Ice country.
Ooh. There is the National Park.
National Park there.
Samoa.
Yeah.
Going to Samoa.
Yeah.
Yep, and then February is a big trip, Patagonia. So we're going to go hiking down in Patagonia. So that'll be.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm super
like
excited.
Seriously.
I've been to Chile and I've been to Argentina, but we never really went to.
Yeah,
Patagonia.
But Patagonia is like you know.
It's the.
And then I even think of the company, and they have an amazing publishing house.
Yes.
And we've interviewed some of their authors, but the company itself, I think if we are going to ever look at a brand that should be replicated, would be Patagonia, the brand, and how they've donated so much land, taken their profits to save huge, huge tracts of land. Huge.
Right.
I know they, you know, that they are not the country Patagonia or the, you know, the place. They're a company, but. Every time I hear Patagonia, I just go, you know, I want to go because number one, there's bird life and you're going, oh my gosh, I can't wait. I can't wait for you to
but
go.
But, you know, the hiking is supposedly incredible and the sights are incredible. And so, yeah, I'm extremely excited about that trip. So that's definitely on the agenda. So a couple big trips. Well,
New River Gorge is going to be amazing in the fall. We did that last year. In the fall, just a little teeny bit of it. It was absolutely spectacular. We have friends there now, literally as we're recording this, and they did this hike under the bridge that like the cat.
I'm doing that it's called the bridge walk. I'm doing it.
Yeah, they did it. Yeah. And she said like, it was really, but you got to do it. She's like, you'll be really proud of yourself when you do it.
Yep.
I'm not good at heights and neither is she, but she's like, I did it, you know, and
I'm excited. Yeah. Very excited.
Yeah.
About
no.
It,
and
like,
it's such,
it has to be done, you know?
Well, what's interesting about that park is it's not just like the typical national park. It's kind of like Hot Springs in a way that it's part of a community and multiple communities and ghost towns. And, where we went was like Sandstone Falls, I think, where, you know, we were beautiful, and you're going to hit it right at just a beautiful time of year when I think around the same time we did last year. So you're going to have an amazing time in upstate New York. It's going to be gorgeous at that time. There's good wine upstate New York, you know?
Yes.
Debbie, you're living the life, girl. We love it. And Fire Monkey's happy.
Well,
she's doing good.
You know, trying to get to these places that I've, you know, wanted to go to. Why waste time? Let's do it.
Mm-mm.
You know? So,
I love it. Yep. I love it. And I'm so glad you're going to New River Gorge because we're going to do as much as we can to cover that area because people really don't quite get how and why it became a national park unit and part of the National Park Service. And there's many reasons why. And when you have communities connected, it's also part of protection for all. It's the history and the communities being connected. And I know when you go, you're going to flip out a little bit. So in a good way.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. And there's people who don't think it should be a national park unit. And I tend to disagree. Well, because they expect it, you know, when there's a expectation of everything should be like Yosemite and be closed off and done this way.
Right.
And that's not how things are.
Right.
You know that,
right?
From the different parks you've been to. And
there's
reasons. And sometimes a national park unit will be there just because of one frog or something.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And if you don't
there
have
are
the frog.
There are many different reasons why national parks have been created, you know, or given that status, you know. So I'm always interested to hear that story, you know, what is the reason behind this park versus this park, you know?
Yeah, there's always a reason. Like, they did that people got mad about the arches in St. Louis. And I'm like, actually, the arches, that's a gateway. That's like a whole reason. There's a cultural and historical reason of that. And then if you also look at like Indiana, you went there. The Indiana Dunes. I've heard the same thing. And I'm going, I'm not reading your article. Debbie's article on that is up on nationalparktraveling.com. Just type in Indiana sand dunes and you'll find it. And I'm looking, you were there in the fall and you had like blue water, you had sand dunes and you had fall colors all in one park.
Gorgeous. Yeah, it was
like,
gorgeous.
Come on, people, get past it.
That was in late September and it was gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah. And here, the thing is, the more land we can protect, the better we are all. For humans and plants and animals, we're all going to be better off. So just saying, just did a plug there, but you know, just saying, have to get on my soapbox once in a while there, Ms. Fire Monkey. But again, everyone, Debbie's article is up on the blendradioandtv.com. The link is in the show notes, no matter where you're listening, YouTube, Spotify, Google, all those places. And of course, you can keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Debbie Stone, who we call Fire Monkey, Debbie Stone. You know, I lose her email sometimes because I have her under Fire Monkey or Debbie on my computer. But no, anyway, Debbie Stone is her name, and she is on our show every fourth Tuesday. And we always have a blast hearing about her latest adventures. Thank you so much, Debbie.
Thanks so much. Next time.
Yoo-hoo.
Take care. Bye-bye.